Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
I am hoping new events are a hit downtown. The folks at Odessa Arts and Downtown Odessa will be trying something a little different this year. June's Hot Summer Nights free concert series will be replaced with First Friday events that will run year-long. Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm said they hope to kick off the new event on the first Friday in August. Hot Summer Nights was created 27 years ago to bring people downtown during a time when nothing much was happening in that part of town, but that's not the case any longer, Hamm said. Over the last few years, as we've seen downtown grow, we've learned Hot Summer Nights doesn't actually drive people into downtown businesses. It doesn't raise the revenue for our downtown businesses, and on occasion, it competes with things that are already going on at the Ector Theater or things that are already going on at a different venue, Hamm said. So in recent months, Odessa Arts has been speaking with downtown Odessa and downtown businesses to figure out how to drive people inside their shops and restaurants, Hamm said. A visit to Lubbock sparked the idea of holding events on the first Friday of every month, he said. Lubbock's First Friday Art Trail is a free, self-guided public art event where participants can visit art centers, museums, galleries, and businesses to admire art exhibits that are constantly changing. They can explore on their own or they can jump on board free trolleys. It really does change the way that these things work if you're holding them inside a business. So if we have live music at Torchy's Tacos, people are probably going to be also ordering food and drinks at Torchy's Tacos. So it raises the revenue, Hamm said. It also makes more than one venue active as opposed to a park or a theater. And while Hot Summer Nights used to attract an older crowd, Hamm thinks First Fridays will draw younger residents. There's been some discussion about how the median age of the Permian Basin has been dropping, and so that's one of the reasons we looked at something that was a little more mobile and a little bit more involved with the downtown businesses, he said. Instead of having 8 concerts in 8 weeks, Hamm said there will be a year-round programming. Another bonus is never having to cancel due to inclement weather, Hamm said. When Lubbock gets hit by a rain or other nasty weather, they simply scale back the event or move events inside. Perhaps First Fridays will also be able to incorporate Odessa College's new green space and performance canopies into the activities on occasion, Hamm said. Some First Fridays might have themes if they're close to a holiday, such as a Valentine's Day, Hamm said. Reverend Mullins finds home in Kermit. First Baptist leader says Jonah's story a valuable lesson. The Reverend Dudley Mullins says there is a lot of humor in the story of Jonah, but it conveys the serious message that the will of God must be obeyed. Recently having taught the story from Luke 11, 29 through 32, the Reverend Mullins said Jonah wanted God to destroy the wicked city of Nineveh instead of having them repent. Jonah went the other way, so God sent him a taxi in the form of a whale, said Mullins, pastor of the First Baptist Church at 400 East Bryan Street. Jonah got a second chance with God, and I think he looked like a heavenly being when he came out of there. Mullins is a native of Burke Burnett, who worked for 8.5 years as an auto body repairman and for a glassworks company before earning an associate degree in divinity at the Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth. He was a pastor in Wanpanuka and Red Oaks, Oklahoma, and Big Spring before arriving here 20 years ago. He and his wife, Deborah, have 2 children and 5 grandchildren. I have found that the longer you stay at a church, the better the ministry, said Mullins, who is director of missions for the Pecos Valley Baptist Association. I don't think it starts taking hold till after 3 years. The First Baptist Church meets at 11 a.m. Sunday with an average attendance of 40 to 60 people, which is down from the 70-75 it had before the pandemic. COVID blew us away, and we are still trying to get back from that, Mullins said. We lost quite a few who got out of the habit, and it takes a stick of dynamite to get them to respond. Mullins said Luke, a physician who wrote excellent Greek, was the only Gentile writer of the New Testament. Mullins' favorite scripture is Romans chapter 8, verse 38 through 39, which says, "For I am convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither the present nor the future, nor any powers, neither height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus our Lord." Deacon Reeves said Mullins is a very good Christian man who cares about people. Dudley loves the Lord, and he doesn't care if you're black, brown, white, or green, Reeves said. He treats everybody the same. We love him and hope he stays much longer. Ready, set, surrender. History's shortest war. Wars can drag on forever. History tells us of the Hundred Years' War, the 80 Years' War, and the 30 Years' War. The 2001 to 2014 Afghanistan War is considered America's longest conflict. Yet sometimes wars wrap up with surprising swiftness. Take history's shortest war. How long do you think it lasted? A year? A month? A week? Not even close. Get ready to learn what took place during all 38 minutes of the Anglo-Zanzibar War, the briefest conflict ever. It was fought on a single Thursday morning from 9:02 to 9:40, to be precise, on August the 27th, 1896. Here's how it happened. Africa was a colonial grab bag in the closing days of the 19th century. Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and even little Belgium were snatching up big chunks of that continent. The Brits especially had grand plans. They dreamed of an unbroken string of colonies on the eastern side of the continent, stretching from Egypt down to South Africa. However, the Germans, always the Germans, were blocking their way. They wanted to make sure the British dream never came true, so they decided to make things interesting. The Sultanate of Zanzibar was an island nation in the Indian Ocean near modern Tanzania. The British recognized its sovereignty in 1886, and for 10 years, everyone played well together. Then the Germans started meddling, hoping to turn Zanzibar against the Brits. Sheikh Hamid bin Thuwani ruled the country as Sultan for 4 years. He liked the British, but some members of his inner circle didn't. And wouldn't you know it, the Sheikh died suddenly at age 39 on August the 25th. It is widely believed he was poisoned by his cousin, Sheikh Khalib bin Barhash, who immediately proclaimed himself the new Sultan. Then the fun started. The Brits hauled out a 30-year-old treaty that said a sultan could only take power with British approval, and the Brits very much have disapproved of the new guy who was pro-German. Surprise, surprise. All day on the 26th, diplomats talked back and forth. It was rapidly becoming obvious negotiations wouldn't settle the mounting crisis. British officials decided to snuff the new royal regime in its cradle and began planning accordingly. The Sultan responded by barricading himself inside his palace and turning it into a fortress. Say what you will about the British, but they don't fool around when you make them mad, and the new Sultan had royally ticked them off. So for four heavily armed British warships steamed into Zanzibar Harbor and pointed their powerful guns at the palace. By the morning of the 27th, Brits' patience had run out. They sent the traditional demand that the palace surrender. The Sultan replied, "We have no intention of hauling down our flag, and we do not believe you would open fire on us." The British quickly answered, "We do not want to open fire, but unless you do as you are told, we shall certainly do so." They waited 30 minutes and heard nothing. Rear Admiral Harry Rawson raised the signal flag, instructing the warships, prepare for action. 5 minutes later, the order was changed to commence bombardment, and at exactly 9:02, the firing began. When the guns fell silent at 9:40, the palace and adjoining harem were piles of rubble. As for the new sultan, he and his closest advisors took off when the first shells hit, running to the nearby German consulate. They were smuggled to German East Africa and granted asylum. British troops later captured the ex-sultan during World War I and exiled him to St. Helena, the same barren island where the deposed Napoleon Bonaparte had spent his last days. And so the Anglo-Zanzibar War was over almost as soon as it began. A British sailor was slightly injured, his side's only casualty. But if this farce sounds like something out of Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, think again. Some 3,000 defenders, servants, and slaves were barricaded inside the palace. More than 500 of them, one of six, were killed or seriously wounded. Thus ended history's shortest war. It may not be the most bizarre conflict in the annals of warfare, but it sure comes close.
Good day, this is Glenn. I'll be reading the Odessa American, May 21st, 2023 edition. Miss Texas scholarship set up in Hubbard's name. In honor of the 25th anniversary of becoming Miss Texas, the Tatum Hubbard Visionary Scholarship Fund has been created. John Trichetti, executive director of the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin and friend of Hubbard's, formed the scholarship. He is on the Miss Texas Scholarship Foundation board. I thought, what better way to honor her and do something good for the organization than start an endowed scholarship in her name, Trichetti said in a phone interview. He added that he has known Hubbard for 10 or 12 years, but has been a fan for longer than that. Just felt like the right time to do something like that, given it was her 25th anniversary and I was in a position being on the foundation board to help establish a scholarship in her name and honor her in that way, but also have it pay dividends and benefit young women for years to come, Trichetti said. The goal is to offer $1,000 the first year. The first recipient of the Tatum Hubbard Visionary Scholarship will be at this year's Miss Texas pageant this summer. They have a big scholarship luncheon and Tatum will be there so all the contestants that are eligible can apply. There's an application process. Then Tatum wanted to have interviews. She felt like that was important, and so she has a committee together, and they'll select a recipient and hopefully select a recipient every year in perpetuity, he said. Some of the scholarship criteria is that you have to be a first-generation college student and have your primary residence west of the I-35 corridor. You should study education, public service, broadcast journalism, or journalism. When Hubbard heard about Trichetti's effort, she asked herself if it had really been 25 years. Her second thought was how honored she felt. It's taken him a lot of time and effort to contact people who would be interested and work with the Miss Texas organization. It's so nice that he would see the value in doing that and want to create opportunity for young women and then attach my name to it, Hubbard said. She added that it's really cool. After she was crowned Miss Texas, Hubbard stayed involved for many years emceeing the pageant, which she said is based in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I didn't attend every year. Last year was the first time that I've been back in 10 or 15 years. I went because my daughter, who is now a teenager, had a friend who was competing, and so we went to see her, but it was wonderful. I've been disconnected for too long, Hubbard said. Her $40,000 ship and scholarship money for the pageant enabled her to pay for her college education and gave her a chance to do an internship in Washington, D.C. My family would never have been able to do that, and so it was really life-changing for me. This is how I paid for my education, she said. Very few things have changed over the last 25 years, Hubbard said. I competed 6 times before I finally won. I started doing pageants because I was a singer and a dancer. Back then, there was no American Idol or So You Think You Can Dance. If you wanted to perform, that was your platform. There was talent. There was interview. I was good at interview because it was a lot about current events. Even at that age, I read the newspaper every day. I was a news person even as a teenager. I loved that kind of stuff. So interview was fun for me, and then there's the evening gown, and when I did it, there was the swimsuit competition, she added. Pet of the week, Princess. Princess, a 6-month-old female lab mix, needs to be adopted into a good home. To adopt Princess or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 7012 Mockingbird Lane, call 432-257-4311, visit www.odessahumanesociety.org or leave a message at facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa/. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay/neuter contract along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $75. To help support HSO, donations are welcomed at tinyurl.com/279urb4s. Donations will go towards kennels, cat house, and adoption center. Pet of the week, Trevor. Trevor, a two-week-old male kitten, needs to be adopted into a good home. To adopt Trevor or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 7012 Mockingbird Lane, call 432-257-4311, visit www.odessahumanesociety.org, or leave a message at facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa/. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay/neuter contract along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $75. To help support HSO, donations are welcomed at tinyurl.com/279urb4s. Donations will go towards kennels, cat house, and adoption center. Ukraine Pen Pal Program Gaining Steam by Odessa American. A competition organized in the United States got young people from Ukraine talking about what the past year has meant to me. The contest included 180 entries from students across the war-torn country and even from some of the 8 million Ukrainians who fled their homeland after the war began. The contest grew out of the Odessa to Odessa Pen Pal program at Odessa Collegiate Academy. The program now has 800 students involved with about 350 in the United States and 450 in Ukraine, said Chris Madd, director of the Ukraine USA Pen Pal program. A TV station in the city of Chernihiv, population 280,000, intends to run a story on the contest, and there's been more coverage. Students responded to the theme of remembering the past year with essays, illustrations, photos, videos, and poems. These works show clearly that none of the students has forgotten the invasion date of February 24, 2022, and the anguish that followed. In addition, the students said their patriotism has grown, not weakened, because of the Russian attack. The contest was arranged by two international organizations, X-Culture, Dr. Vasyl Taras, president, and Ukraine USA Pen Pal program, Chris Mead, director. A dozen judges helped select the winning entries, a news release said. Most of the participating students are in schools that are part of the 800-student Ukraine USA Pen Pal program. This program has been closely allied with X-Culture, an organization that has trained more than 100,000 business students worldwide on solving actual company problems. Other key contributors to building the contest and the Ukraine USA Pen Pal program were 48 English teachers in schools across Ukraine. While they didn't participate in the contest, students in Michael Crowder's World Geography class at Odessa Collegiate Academy took part in the Pen Pal program. I'm super happy that it's going to different schools around the country and they're getting more people involved in it. I'm going to get with Chris probably when I get back in August and see if there's means to continue next year. I think the incoming freshmen will enjoy the opportunity as well. I want to see if we can keep it going here, Crowder said. He added that the students were really engaged, especially when they started at the beginning of the year. I'm looking forward to doing it again next year, Crowder said. Mead of the Ukraine USA Pen Pal program said it's important that the program spreads because he wants Ukrainians to feel like they have support. He added that he can't support all 40 million, but he'd like their teachers to know that someone here is thinking about them. It could also help increase the assistance provided to Ukraine. One of my motivations for this is I want to punch Putin in the nose for the things he tells people about the war. Mead said he hopes the information seeps through Russia sooner rather than later and that more Russians will realize Ukrainians are peaceful people and that the war is just a land grab. Master Gardeners, Raised Beds Present Numerous Options by Debbie Rowland and Emmy Ohmschneider, Master Gardeners. Raised beds are a great option for many reasons. They use less water, it's easier to keep weeds at bay, and they allow you to amend a smaller amount of soil than an in-ground garden. A raised bed can take many forms, from a simple frame with no bottom that sits on the ground to a waist-high box with a bottom on legs. Raised beds can be made of wood, brick, cinder block, or metal. Old stock tanks, large plastic containers, or even old bathtubs can be repurposed. They are a great option if you have health issues or are feeling your age. We can relate to that. The advantage of a raised bed structure assures that you will not be compacting your soil by walking on it, and rotating crops every year is much easier. So whether you are purchasing a bed, repurposing, or making your own bed, the next steps are the same. Site your bed. Pick a level spot on your yard that gets full sun and is close to a water source. Build your bed. Your bed should be at least 12 inches deep. My metal beds are 20 inches deep, and I find that this is my favorite depth. You can shape your bed to fit your garden area. I have several separate beds instead of one large one so that I can easily reach my plants and rotate my crops from year to year. Fill your bed. Lay down weed cloth or several layers of cardboard on the bottom. Fill with a mixture of potting soil and compost. Don't worry too much about ratios or getting it perfect. Put it in and mix it up. If your bed is deeper, like the cinder block bed below, it is going to take more effort and filler. Bottom filler can be just about any organic material, old hay or potting soil, kitchen scraps, or composted farm waste. Whatever you put in should be herbicide and pesticide free. Don't use anything you wouldn't want to eat later. It took several years to completely fill the tallest beds, but I went ahead and planted the first year anyway. It took more bending over to access the plants, but I was still able to successfully grow crops. Water your bed. Get the soil in each bed as saturated as you can before you plant. Mix it up and water it again. You will want the soil mixture to absorb water. Plant your bed. Follow the seed packet directions for planting closely because you don't want your plants too close together. The wind needs to be able to get through and the sun needs to be able to reach each plant. Maintain your bed. Add new compost annually since the soil will settle and adding compost minimizes the need for fertilizer. In winter, continually add kitchen waste, leaves, and farm waste, anything organic, to the top of the bedding. Let it sit there over the winter and dig it in when spring arrives. If you have questions, call the AgriLife office in Odessa at 498-4071 or in Midland at 686-4700. Additional information in our blog for access to past articles is available at westtexasgardening.org. Click on resources.
Iron deficiency and drinking tea. Dear Dr. Roach, regarding your recent column on iron deficiency, my blood bank told me drinking tea somehow negatively affects iron. I'd love an explanation, as this could be a possible cause behind the low iron levels of the 82-year-old mentioned in the column. Dr. Roach's answer: drinking large amounts of tea with meals does reduce iron absorption, particularly the iron found in grains and vegetables. Coffee also reduces iron absorption, but the effect is greater with tea. A class of compounds found in tea, tannins, bind with the iron, preventing absorption. It is possible, but unlikely, that tea alone is responsible for low iron levels in most people. Tea that is drunk 2 hours away from a meal will not affect iron absorption. Childhood trauma resurfaces for new mom. Dear Abby, throughout my childhood, my mother was controlling in many ways. One of them was my clothes. She dressed me in ridiculous outfits that I found humiliating. If I expressed an opinion about anything, I was treated as being bad. It affected my mental health, which resulted in me hating the way I look. I went through multiple eating disorders and addiction, and I had plastic surgery 15 years ago. After many years of therapy, I am now doing better emotionally. I also endured many years of heart-shattering infertility, but I am finally a mother, working hard to give my child a better life than I had. My mother continues buying clothes for my child, and receiving these gifts fills me with rage. My son is too young to pick out his own clothes, but I know what he likes and choose clothes accordingly. I allow him to select which items he wears, guilt-free. My mother seems to buy clothes based on my son's interests, but I resent her buying any clothes for him. I want her to stop. It's my turn to be a parent. I feel so much guilt, anger, and shame giving away or selling clothes I don't want, like I'm being bad. Despite therapy, my childhood trauma persists. How can I ask my mother to stop buying unwanted gifts? Signed, Bad Kid for Life. Dear Abby responds, Dear Bad Kid, do not ask your mother to stop buying clothes for your son. Tell her. While you're at it, tell her what you have been doing with them and why. Then if she doesn't already know, explain exactly how the way she raised you affected you. To do that isn't being bad. It is honest and long overdue. If she persists after that, feel free to donate the clothes because another child might be thrilled to have them. Another Dear Abby. My 50-year-old daughter divorced her husband 15 years ago because she thought she could do better. From what I could see, he was a good husband. She didn't work and lived a comfortable lifestyle with two small children. Since the divorce, that lifestyle has gone steadily downhill. She can't hold a job because she always finds some way to be offended and quits. She had a house my husband and I paid the down payment on, but lost it by making the ownership joint with her abusive second husband. She no longer receives child support because her children are grown, so her finances are worse than ever. We bought her a car last year because she had no transportation. My question is this: how much should we continue to financially support her? We are well off, but where should our obligation end for a daughter who continues to make bad decisions? Signed, Put Upon Mom in Georgia. Dear Put Upon Mom, as parents of a 50-year-old daughter, you and your husband are likely in your 70s. You have two choices. If you wish to continue enabling your daughter, she will receive whatever is left of your estate, so she shouldn't be homeless after you die if you leave it in a trust. If you don't wish to continue your financial support, you may need counseling to help you overcome your instinct to rescue your self-destructive daughter, who is no longer a child.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.